Today our people can see that we're faced with a government conspiracy. This government has failed us. The senators who are filibustering, concerning your and my rights, that's the government. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now.
Yeah, read the headlines. It's another dramatic episode. That's what we face daily, living on this reckless globe. My pen explodes just writing about these present days. Losing optimism, thinking things will never change. The streets on fire, always in an endless blaze. From gun for gun combat with plenty lead exchange. To Mr. Metal sprays, innocence get sent to graves based on any cause. From money to a jealous rage, or maybe orders of presidential directive.
What is going on, folks? Will Turpin here for Demand the Truth. Fake Mike, real news. I'm here again with Tony Gosling, former reporter for the BBC from thisweek.org.uk. We've had a very interesting conversation last time he was on with us, and I've got a few more questions today because the world has changed quite drastically, and some of the things that have happened, Tony has been talking about for quite a long time. Tony, how are you? Welcome back to the show.
Hi, well, this is about real reporting because there's been a very definite attempt. I mean, I would suggest since around about the early 1990s to remove journalists who challenge certain positions. Now, it's not all authority, but the world has been being, particularly the Western world, the transatlantic world, has been being steered in this pro-war direction towards war with China, etc. And there's been lots of things going on within our countries, in the US and the UK and right across Europe, to do that. And people like me who've been picking up on this on these moves have simply been booted out. You know, I was booted out of the BBC back in 1993. I mean, they do it in a subtle way, you know. And also, believe it or not, I've just been booted off the airwaves here in Bristol from Bristol Community Radio. So the idea is, you know, no decent journalists are allowed to carry on and thrive. You probably haven't been following this. I don't know if it's been covered in the US, but over the weekend and the last few days, there's been an absolute furore in all of the media, everywhere you go, against this guy called Dominic Cummings, who during the lockdown drove up to Durham to get his four-year-old son's childcare sorted out. I mean, he was down in London, this kid, and being harassed by the press, etc. down there. He's the chief of staff in Downing Street, and he's tried to get this sorted out. He got it sorted out, and now the whole press in Britain is crying out for him to be sacked. Now, most of Britain is basically moving out of a lockdown. We're not really interested in the lockdown that much anymore. People obviously are keeping safe, particularly those who are most vulnerable from the COVID-19. But this is, it's been absolutely fascinating to watch the way that the media is now becoming basically arrogant. Like, we are in charge. We can hire and fire. If we want to have a coup in Downing Street, we will do it. And we will just keep attacking and attacking for days and days and fill up the whole news agenda with our bile until we get our way. Now, this is exactly the same sort of unhinged tactic that we've seen against Colonel Gaddafi. We saw against Assad. You know, these, what they're doing basically is they are trying to decide who is allowed to rule us and who isn't. And this is how arrogant the media has now come in this country. And it's, I think, been fascinating to watch because, I mean, we were just listening. There's very, very little from, I mean, for example, Laura Koonsberg on the BBC, and there's a guy called Robert Peston who used to be on the BBC, he's now on ITV. These journalists are political correspondents, but they have just decided that this guy's got to go. The country's not interested. But so what we're getting is we're getting a kind of unhinged media. And there's only a few people really like me who were sacked from their jobs who decided, look, you didn't sack me because I wasn't any good. You sacked me because I was too good and I'm not going away. Don't expect you can do that. But so that's happened to me in the 1990s with the BBC. It happened in about 6 years ago with Russia Today. So I did about 3 or 4 years regularly, almost every week, on RT, doing commentary on all the major stories. RT moved into Syria. I mean, sorry, Russia moved into Syria, and literally the same day they stopped using me on the TV, which is absolutely fine. You know, they've decided to do a different tactic. And now Bristol Community FM has also decided that Tony's politics show that used to go, where we did 12 years every week, 2 hours live and an hour of in-depth interviews on FM radio here in Bristol, that's got to go now too. And the station manager won't even pick up the phone to me. You know, I've been phoning him up saying, when's my show going back? But all I'm getting is the Al Murta, you know. So it's been quite interesting to see how this has happened over the years. Bristol, by the way, I think is a very important city in regards to transatlantic relations, because we were a Templar port back in medieval times. And also behind the financing and the exploitation and exploration by John Cabot in 1497, I think it was, that he sailed over to Newfoundland and supposedly discovered North America, even though, of course, there were loads of Native Americans. Now, we've now got in Bristol a very powerful organization called the Merchant Venturers. Hardly anyone seems to have heard of them, but these are the guys who financed that Cabot's reconnaissance for genocide of North America. And then they also made a fantastic amount of money from the slave trade. And we've just heard this week that the first black woman is going to be made a merchant venturer. And of course, our present mixed race mayor, Marvin Rees, whose father was actually the first guy to introduce crack cocaine, Valentine Walker, into Bristol in the 1980s. So, you know, that he is looking to be the first black male to actually join the Merchant Venturers, which is absolutely astounding, because he's ridden to power 4 years ago on the idea that there were going to be some sort of memorial for the slave trade. That's not happened. It's just been totally forgotten about. And now he's joining the slave traders.
Oh, my God.
So lots going on here in Bristol, but also, of course, with the lockdown and censorship, basically loads of censorship on YouTube, particularly of expert views on the lockdown. People who have spent their lives working on pandemics, if they are doing good, intelligent critiques, YouTube are just caving in and taking stuff down. And even journalists, there was that whole business with Business Insider, actually flagging up these videos so they could get them taken down, rather like the journalist that goes and sets fire to the warehouse and then does a story about the fire in the warehouse. So we're getting to a very, very, you know, nasty stage in lack of freedom of the press, lack of journalism, and this is makes my blood boil. So the idea that by taking me off FM in Bristol that I'm just going to sort of crawl away and disappear, well, that's very much what the mayor, Marvin Rees, here in Bristol would love to see. Although he's a Labour, he's much closer, it seems, to the business community and the big developers, you know, the people that build the tower blocks, than he is to the ordinary people here in St. Paul's. That's effectively where we are now. It's becoming like what they seem to want is a police state. I don't think the police want a police state, but there are some very arrogant, powerful rulers, I think, who feel threatened by, the good journalism that has been over the years, and also particularly by Brexit, because this has really upset the apple cart. I mean, having covered the Bilderberg conferences for many years with my website, Bilderberg.org, which is still hanging around there, I did loads of research in the 1990s into the origins of the Bilderbergers. Basically Nazis, modern Nazis, who are a political lobbying wing for the for NATO and their friends and big business and a kind of Fourth Reich, a kind of Fourth Economic Reich. So they effectively are the chiefs round here. You know, they like to be able to pick and choose governments, but they hated Brexit. I spoke to some Bilderbergers face-to-face about Brexit back in 2016 at the Dresden conference, and they are absolute. You could see as soon as you say the word, the hairs go up on the back of their neck. They turn around on their heel and march away. Shut up. Who is this man? You know, their body language was absolutely clear. Brexit is the thing the power elite want least of all, because this whole idea of a united Europe is a United States of Europe, really, is something that they've been working on for decades.
Now, you brought up Bilderberg, and that was going to be my next question.
Okay.
We to my knowledge, I didn't. I didn't hear about a Bilderberg conference this year. If they did do it, it must have been really under the radar. Did they Zoom chat and they just said, oh, we'll see you next year? What happened with Bilderberg this year? What's the status of the Bilderberg group?
Okay, well, we're talking on the 26th of May 2020, so it's any time now. It could be this coming weekend. It's unlikely to have been last weekend. It's usually the last weekend in May, first in June. Okay, so really good question about Bilderberg, because they, and almost as soon as the lockdown and Bill Gates and his people got their way back in the middle of March, the end of March, Bilderberg announced that their conference was cancelled. Well, of course, that doesn't mean to say it's cancelled at all. But, you know, they speak with forked tongue, these guys, and they've been proven to do so time and time again. So why not this time? So what they, I would suspect, are doing is they're having a secret conference. So they are very unlikely. Some people get it all wrong, Will. They're very unlikely to have some sort of Skype or Zoom conference, right?
Because that would be too easy to hack.
So they could easily do it on Skype or Zoom. No, you've just missed the point. The whole point of them being in the, physically in the same space is that they can cut deals which can't be spied on or under surveillance. So the sorts of deals where we're talking about you do this for me and I'll do this for you on the world stage in geopolitics, those cannot take place on Skype. They can't take place on Zoom. So they need to be in the same space. I would suggest we need to look at the steering committee and where they are this weekend. We might well find that for some reason they're not where they were supposed to be. The question is, where have they gone? You know, there's quite a lot of private jets flying around nowadays. They may be sitting on a kind of Bond villains island somewhere, having a good old chat about how the whole lockdown's going and whether Bill Gates is going to get his way with his digital ID.
Now, I saw that you posted a couple of weeks ago about how you didn't agree with David Icke's assessment as far as the fact that COVID is not real. But he has every right for freedom of speech to say that. And that goes back to what you were talking about earlier with the YouTube censorship. Now, YouTube is banning people that are not conspiracy theorists like David Icke, very reputable medical doctors and other people from the establishment. But I think we're seeing some good news with people like Joe Rogan going over to Spotify and a little shift in that. But as far as what's going on with COVID and how it interrelates to the Bilderberg group, what's your take on that? What's really going on with COVID? And is there any relation there to the Bilderberg group?
Well, yes, there is. There most definitely is. I mean, I don't go to that many Bilderberg conferences, not because I don't enjoy covering it, just because I can't literally afford to. But I did go to Dresden, and one of the guests there, she was one of these people who's involved in the CRISPR technology, which you probably come across, CRISPR, which is this
gene editing technology, folks, for anybody that doesn't know.
So this is very, very much built. In fact, we were wondering, we had lots of, they're great conferences to go to because you always meet loads and loads of very intelligent, either citizen journalists, ordinary people, or occasionally a proper freelance journalist that's onto this stuff. And so, you know, she was, I can't remember the woman's name, but she was there. She was from one of these tech companies. And we were all scratching our heads going, well, what the hell has this technology got to do with Bilderberg? Well, now we know, don't we? Because they're not talking about any kind of, Edward Jenner style vaccine for COVID-19. They're talking about the CRISPR one, which is basically a genetically modified, it's not just a genetically modified vaccine. It goes in and genetically modifies you, you know, in order to protect you, supposedly. But, I mean, this is really dangerous, this stuff, because there's a lot of articles. I've been looking around, finding a lot of articles that basically say what this does is it's like sending the lords of chaos into your bloodstream to just play around with your DNA and snip, snip, snip away and see what comes out. Now, that to me doesn't sound like a very effective vaccine. And anyway, we keep being told that this COVID-19 can hang around in your body for a long time, even though you think that you've got rid of it. Your immune system can't cope with it, and you can catch it again. I'm not sure I believe that. But the point here is, I mean, how is a vaccine going to help you? Of course, it's not, you know. And anyway, the vaccine will be around after most people, certainly here in Britain. I mean, we've had various estimates between something like 35. The latest estimate was 19 million people in Britain have had this. So they don't need a vaccine. Thank you very much. So there, I think they may have overstretched themselves, Will, actually, in trying to impose this lockdown. We saw a few weeks ago Neil Ferguson from Imperial College, who was almost entirely Bill Gates funded, booted out because there are certain experts in central government and in our cabinet and in our government here in Britain under Boris Johnson who have decided that this whole thing is not actually credible. I mean, he's booted out. Basically, the man behind the lockdown, it's funny, the whole country, let me just explain, the whole country got a bit lighter the day that Neil Ferguson got sacked, because you could just tell amongst people, it's like, okay, so the lockdown isn't quite so definite and serious anyway.
Well, that was a real aha moment, because over here in the United States, if something's mentioned about England, first of all, it doesn't happen very often. Second of all, people might like glaze over their eyes, but this is a big deal. Neil Ferguson, he's the dude that created these models, which are incorrect, which created the lockdown. He got caught going to see his mistress. So are you saying that had a major effect on the people of the UK to kind of see through this?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite clear. Great. I mean, the British public are not stupid. And when we're getting to be like we were told the Soviet Union was here, you know, because most of the mainstream press is ridiculously pro-lockdown. And the Brits see through a lot of this. So we're reading between the lines. By sacking Ferguson, Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings, who is now, they're trying to sack him today. These people are making it clear that the whole premise of this entire situation we got ourselves into back in March, the guy behind it all is gone. And that's very, I mean, this is the way the Brits read it. I just felt, I mean, just literally going out on the street, everything felt a little bit lighter. People are smiling a bit more, you know, that literally the day after it happened. So, you know, I think, okay, so it was a sunny day as well, so they might have been smiling because of that. But you just get a sense that people don't quite necessarily believe in it as much as they used to. And the other thing is with this attack on Dominic Cummings in Downing Street, all over the press, literally, it was Friday night, all day through Saturday, Sunday, Monday. We're now into Tuesday, all day Tuesday. So we're having four days of wall-to-wall coverage of a non-story about Cummings and how he's got to go. Well, I mean, you know, this is just the same old tactic. Coup tactics. These are the sorts of arrogant kinds of tactics that were brewed up by people like Churchill's private secretary, Desmond Morton, between the world wars. We want civil servants and journalists in order to decide who is allowed to run our country or not, and actually not the people. We've just had Boris has just been re-elected with a romping majority. I mean, I'm no fan of the Tory party, but he's got in because the Labour Party was sabotaged and conned into not backing Brexit. And so it gives Boris a clear field. And he's in now. He is in a very strong position. And because of the sacking of Ferguson, I think the Bilderberg elite, you know, literally the United States of Europe people, the media that are part of all of that, of course, most of these are businesses. And if they've been opposing the United States of Europe project, they've basically been bought up by big business and their whole view been turned around. So they're all pro-Brexit and they see this as a great opportunity, Will, right? So we're in a halfway stage all through 2020. So we left in January, the political institutions, no more European Parliament, no more going to the Council of Europe. So we're not in the political institutions, which so-called decide, even though actually it's the industrialists that really decide what goes on in Europe. So we're out of that, but we're still in what they call the single market and the customs union. And that is a very important difference, right? Because we are still under the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice. So we are in the same situation for 12 months or 11 months as Switzerland and Norway. So they are in the single market, so they're in the trading system, and they have to submit to EU decisions about everything to do with trade, which is a very important part that Britain needs to get back control of those decisions. But we're not able to input at all into the political side of it. And that's the way they'd like to keep it. So that's why I think they're having a go now at Dominic Cummings, because he's one of the most important pro-Brexit people who's in Downing Street right now. So they're trying to kick him out. It's quite clear to me what's going on behind the scenes is this is really some retribution for booting out Ferguson, and also to try and freeze Britain in the same situation as Switzerland and Norway. So we can't get recontrolled of our trade policy. We have to leave that permanently in the hands of Brussels.
Yeah, it's too bad. And, you know, we have the lockdown going on worldwide. We have, you know, the continuing saga of Brexit. I don't even know how many years that's been. You got Hong Kong flaring back up. We have a real dichotomy right here with tyranny versus freedom. What does that look like for the rest of the year? What does the future of freedom look like? Because, like you said, I do see, you know, a large segment of the population, you know, going along to get along. Yes, master, whatever the media and news says. But then there's also a lot of people up in arms about this as well, too. What do you say about that and the future going forward?
Well, I think we've got to look at what their plan is, Will. You know, once you understand what their plan is, I think it was William Cooper, your American talk show host, that correctly predicted 9/11 happening before it happened, and then got killed by the FBI very shortly afterwards. He said something about you cannot win the war unless you understand your enemy. And if you understand who your enemy is, then you can win the war. I mean, that's what we need to do. We need to understand who these people are. Who are the Bilderbergers? What's their influence? What's their aims? How do they operate? And what, most importantly, what is their objective? And that has been really exposed by this whole lockdown nonsense. Well, it's not total nonsense, because you need to have some kind of soft lockdown like the Swedes have, where you protect your vulnerable people. I mean, but we also must say, I think this is quite obvious to me that this is some kind of man-made coronavirus. It's not a normal one. But what are they?
Did you say it is or is not a man-made virus? I'm sorry.
Sorry?
Did you say it is or is not a man-made virus?
It is. Evidence is, yes, it is, because this is not a coronavirus is for the common cold. This doesn't do what the common cold does. If you have a look at back when you're on the radio, when we were still on the radio here in Bristol, we were reporting back at the end of January, early February, that it was New Delhi Institute for Virology at New Delhi University, plus another virology institute in India, had been working for 2 days on the genome when it was released by the Chinese. And they say in that report, which has now been withdrawn, although you can still see it up on the internet, they're saying, look, this has got inserts of the AIDS proteins and the SARS protein. So that could very unlikely to have happened naturally. So this is what they were saying back in the beginning of February. This is the effect of this is very, very different to a common cold. We're getting all sorts of disinformation about what's good for you. Hydroxychloroquine, apparently. I mean, I'm no doctor, but there are reports out there that say that it lowers the death rate once people catch this by 50% in some cases. This is a New York, I think it was a New York report that said that a few weeks ago. And now they're having it all over the news now. No, that's nonsense. They're trying to control the narrative. They're issuing these massive global Western media denial stories and running scared. But look, the big take home from this whole business, I think, has been ID 2020 and Gates and his Event 201. The combination of these two makes it absolutely clear to me that they have and there's more evidence as well for that. Loads coming out all the time, actually, that they're looking for this digital ID. I don't know if you've been back to that conference that ID 2020 held. I think it was 2015 or 2016, Will. But if you look on the wall, what you'll see is it looks in the distance like a Catholic crucifix with Jesus on the cross. But if you look more closely, you can see it's not Jesus hanging there. It's a phoenix, right, hanging on the cross.
Really? I did not notice that. Wow.
I know. So this is the Phoenicians, right? This is what people like Prince Charles are into, all this stuff. So this is an alternative. You know, you could. I think it's a bit of a stretch to call it satanic, But it's certainly it's a counter move to, you know, the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Abrahamic faiths. And they're making it clear we're nothing to do with that, you know, and which is a weird thing to see. I mean, most, you know, I would be quite surprised to see that if I went to a conference. What's that? It looks like a kind of dying phoenix rising from the cross. What's that doing on the wall? So anyway, so there is an element of evil to this, of course, as well. So this is being there's an attempt to sort of spin it as, oh, well, this is just a different, an interesting debate going on here. Should we do this? Should we do that? Who should be locked down? Who shouldn't? But, you know, look at it. If it is a man-made virus, which to me is 90% certain, then it is a very evil, a deeply evil act. I also think it's quite clear to me now, Will, it's becoming clear anyway, that this is a counter move to Brexit, as I said. You know, so why has it been done? What's the purpose of it? It's basically a rich super elite who are really angry at the British people and at Europeans for not embracing their totally anti-democratic European Union system, and for particularly at the Brits for starting the process of countries leaving the EU completely. So the idea of the ID 2020 is it will be a card that you take around, you use to get into pubs. You know, you're only allowed to go back to normal once you've had the card. So the whole purpose of this becomes much clearer to me. It's a coercive system. Now, when I got stuck out in New Zealand for a few weeks when the lockdown happened, we couldn't get back to Britain. And I was chatting to a guy over there who worked in hospitals, and he was saying, well, a couple of years ago, they told all of the workers in the hospitals in New Zealand that they had to get vaccinated for flu or they couldn't come in. And there was a big load of uproar about it because a lot of the medical people didn't believe in the flu vaccine. They didn't want to have the flu vaccine. And so there was a very low take up. Anyway, a few weeks later, they introduced a new rule in the hospitals in New Zealand, whereby people had to wear masks to work every day if they hadn't had the flu vaccine, even if they didn't have the flu. So a lot of medical staff just caved in. And eventually, after a few weeks, they all had the flu vaccine. So they didn't want to go around all day with a mask on. So this is how they're going to do it, Will. It's quite obvious to me. Coercion. So you can't go to the pub. You can't do this. You can't do that until you've had the ID 2020. I've been vaccinated. I don't think they're going to force it on people. They're going to make people's lives extremely uncomfortable and really difficult until they do. At least I think that's, you know, that's my take. I'd be interested to hear what yours is.
Well, I know they're definitely going to try to do that. I know Bill Gates, it's been covered in the mainstream news, has talked about a quantum ID. And he's also talked separately about a national tracking database for this. And he also says that we will not return to normal until we have the vaccine. And he also gave $2 million to Jeffrey Epstein after he got caught raping kids. So I don't trust anything that this guy says whatsoever. I would tend to agree with you on that. Now, I know your time is limited, but I did want to ask you one or two more questions. What the hell is going on with Israeli organ harvesting in their exemption there? That's a pretty crazy thing to scroll past. What's going on with that?
Okay, well, yeah, okay. So we just had a law enacted. It was enacted a while ago, but it's just come into law last week, which is about organ harvesting. So when they first started doing this in the 1970s and 1980s, there was a blood donor scheme, an organ donor scheme, whereby, you know, I think actually the two are quite separate, really. I mean, first of all, a lot of the healthcare in this country, when it was nationalized, when it was all controlled by the Department for Health through the government and very open, accountable, you know, you could go along to the meetings and sit and watch and see what the professionals were up to in the medical system. People were very happy to embrace this sort of thing. Slowly but surely, since the 80s, these have been privatized. There's an attempt to privatize all these sorts of, you know, things like the blood donations. It's run by a private company now. But the onus has always been on you to say, yes, I want to opt in as an organ donor. So that might be your heart, your kidneys, your liver, whatever. And you carry an organ donor card. And then if you get in an accident or whatever, you die, and the medical people think, actually, they could have some decent organs in there, then they can take them. Well, now they've changed the whole, they've turned the tables on us, and they said, well, we're going to take them whether you like it or not. And you have to opt out. although it's not been made clear how you opt out. So effectively what they're saying is rather like what happens when your kids go to school is, you know, you, we own your kids and we're going to tell you what, whether or not your kids are allowed to come to school. And if you don't send them to school, if you go take them away on holiday somewhere for an educational holiday to Italy to learn about, I don't know, the Renaissance or something, then we're going to fine you because they're our kids. They're not your kids. So they're now saying effectively the same sort of thing with organs. So they're our organs, not your organs. And if you want us not to take them out of your body, you've got to fight. I don't know how. I mean, I was reading through this. How do you opt out? Well, they say you can opt out, but they don't tell you how. So that was quite a biggie. But the interesting thing is you mentioned that was the Orthodox Jewish community have got some sort of an opt out. They've obviously been active. Why haven't the Christian community or the Islamic community, why haven't they got opt out? And the thing that I would flag up here is that Israel is definitely a center for organ trafficking. There's a recent case which is still going on to do with an Israeli in Cyprus who was extradited to Cyprus, I believe. But anyway, a massive court case over there. This guy is basically just getting organs, harvested organs, and trafficking them around the world and bring them into Cyprus. And, you know, the idea that this whole thing is going to be something that people don't need to worry about. We just take your organs. Well, where are those organs then going to go? Are they going to get trafficked around the world? Who are they going to be trafficked to? And people really need to understand that there's one nationality around the world which you see coming up time and time again in South America, many exploited parts of the world, Africa as well, and many of the people who've been convicted of organ trafficking are Israeli citizens. I don't know why it is that the Israelis seem to think they can get away with this sort of thing. I mean, it's a horrendous thing, obviously. I mean, quite often they are to do with parts of the world where there's a lot of poverty. And they say, well, actually, you know, how about $1,000 for your kidney? And someone who's really desperate is likely to say yes. So this is an absolutely appalling scandal, which never gets talked about because of the Israeli connection. And the Israelis lobby is very powerful in Britain and the United States. So that's one of the reasons that it doesn't get enough commentary that it should do.
Absolutely. Now, that kind of ties into my final question, too, because you're somebody that's really researched this. And I want to thank you, too, because people like myself who aren't anywhere as smart as you, but just say, hey, this guy says he wants to create a tracking database and give us tattoos and vaccinations, and he's donating money to people after they've raped children. I'm no Alfred Einstein. I'm no rocket surgeon, but that raises a couple of red flags. So thank you for being an intelligent person on this side. But then you have people in this whole movement or community that say, well, it's the Bilderberg group. No, it's the Freemasons. No, it's the Jews. From your research, how does this pyramid look? And then what are any final points that you want to make, Tony?
Well, okay, so definitely not the Jews. I mean, this is just a stupid comment. It's, you know, it's actually an anti-Semitic comment, isn't it? I mean, you know, the idea that it is the Jews. No, I mean, okay, so really important to understand the way that religions are being used and have been used for many years. I mean, the Zionists are not really Jews. They're someone who is Jewish is somebody who is not it's not a racial thing. It's somebody who embraces Judaism, which is a faith. You know, so what the Zionists have done is they have attempted to co-opt Judaism to their own evil agenda, and they are basically nihilists. And I would end really by pointing you to the Albert Pike letter of 1817, which is he was a captain in the Confederate Army, and he was also
a brigadier general.
Yeah. Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe he was promoted after I looked into
it. Oh yeah.
Okay. Well, that often happens with Freemasons. So he was the head of the Scottish Rite in the US, which I would suggest is, you know, is basically some kind of Illuminati cover organization, because they never wanted to say hi, we're the Illuminati. But anyway, he was in a conversation with Giuseppe Mazzini over in Italy, who was busy unifying Italy into one big country, so it was easier to control. And of course, Pike was doing the same effectively in the US. The big take home from the American Civil War was nothing really to do with slavery. I mean, that was obviously part of it, but the main object was really to get federal control of the states. So to make sure that Washington was totally in control, you know, so the idea that it was a federation was out of the window, really. I mean, OK, so there is a certain amount of autonomy, obviously, for the states, but they can't. It's very difficult for, say, a state like Texas right now to say, right, well, we've had enough of this federation. We want to go independent. They're not really going to do that. It's just as like, in fact, funnily enough, in Venice, in Italy, there's a big movement there to say we want to secede from Italy. We don't want anything to do with Italy anymore. It's a very intellectual and intelligent city. I think the big take home is the idea that there is a much bigger plan here. And that is for a third world war. I mean, obviously, the First World War and the Second World War had a big influence with the First World War. It dragging the Zionists, doing a deal to drag the US into that First World War in exchange for getting the Balfour Declaration from the British Empire, and the Ottoman Empire being booted out of the Middle East and the British Empire taking over that part of the world. And then when the Second World War comes along, the British do the Balfour Declaration, and Israel is created. So this has been going on over literally, I mean, it's not just decades, Will, it's hundreds of years. And the next war, in Albert Pike's letter that he talks about, is World War III. And this is sparked in the Middle East with a war between the Zionists, the nihilists, he calls them, and I would totally agree with him. If you look up what a nihilist is, it's someone who's prepared to use any subterfuge and method, including pretending to be a Jew, or pretending to be Christian or something, in order to get their way. And the Zionists want a war. That's what they actually. That's why there's been no peace with the idea here is that they create such a terrible situation in the Middle East that, I mean, the Russians are obviously already there. The Americans, you guys, would be dragged in almost straight away fighting the Russians, and then the Chinese are going to come in. We just saw last week, didn't we, the death of the Chinese ambassador to Israel, with hardly a peep in the news about that. Just died in his sleep. You know what happened with him? A very, very important relationship between China and Israel, obviously. But the ambassador's just dead. I mean, the Chinese haven't caused a big fuss about it. But you also mentioned Hong Kong. That's another big flashpoint, an enormous pressure point with millions of Hong Kongers. Actually, I don't know how many people live there. Hundreds of thousands, certainly. And they've had demos there where they've had a million people out on the streets, because although the British did not have democracy when we were running Hong Kong, we certainly didn't have any laws that said if you criticize the president or the guy in charge, you go to jail, or you can't talk about having democracy or independence in Hong Kong. So this, to me, is a real powder keg over there. I actually went, when I was in Hong Kong a few years ago, I went to a place called the Foreign Correspondents Club. I had some really interesting chats with Washington Post, New York Times journalists, London, international media journalists and people like that there. And they were saying, look, it might not look like it, and you may be surprised, but China is going to become more like Hong Kong rather than the other way around, because there's a lot of underlying respect and love amongst ordinary Chinese for the freedoms that people have got in Hong Kong they don't have in China. So who knows which way that's going to go? It's certainly going to look nasty. But the main thing I think to keep our eyes on is, you know, is what's going on in Jerusalem with the rebuilding of the Third Temple and the attempt there. It's pretty clear now to start a Third World War as the spark in the Middle East between Iran and obviously Hezbollah, people like that, and in Israel, which they actively want to encourage that war, and Netanyahu does with his nuclear-armed power, and to drag the rest of the world in. And I think it sounds crazy, but from the evildoer's point of view, it's a perfect excuse to bring in police state powers, and we can see that as, of course, the way to subdue any resistance to that war is to have this COVID-19 lockdown where people can't meet. And if they meet, the police might just turn up and arrest everybody. You know, that I think that the ultimate take home from the COVID-19, the coronavirus, and vaccine to it is to subdue the domestic population in preparation for a war. Well, we shall see, Will.
Yeah, regardless of whether we have a war on the horizon or not, they're definitely taking our human freedoms away. And thankfully, intelligent people like yourself are galvanizing us idiots over here and educating us, and we need that. Absolutely. Thank you for your work. What is the best place besides thisweek.org.uk, which will be in the description box right here? How can people follow your work? Because this guy's getting banned left and right. You guys know I'm shadow banned. You guys know I'm demonetized too. And people like Tony really, really deserve your support. I mean, even if you can't do it monetarily, share his work and do whatever you can. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you and get your work, Tony?
Well, I mean, I'd also mention some other, I think, really good commentators around, which are people like Jason Burmes in New York. You know, he's really on the case. I believe he was connected with the Loose Change documentary and Dylan Avery all those years ago. You know, some people have been really on the case with this for a long, long time. Over here in the UK, we've got the Richie Allen Show, which is pretty much a daily program. Richie was very, very ill with the COVID-19, but he managed to pull through it all, and he's still going. He's very fiery. He'll have all sorts of interesting people. I mean, I don't agree with all of this stuff that all of these people say, but, you know, by having a listen, you've got to work these things out for yourself to a certain extent. I do my best to spell it out for people. And I also, what I do with my program, and I'd love for more people to do this sort of thing, is to go into the analysis of the present day events, but then also to take a step back. And that's one thing that the coronavirus has allowed us to do, given us a bit of time to take a step back and take a look at the bigger picture. Because if you don't see the bigger picture, things like the Albert Pike's plan for three world wars and these revolutions, it's very difficult to see how events that are unfolding before our eyes fit in. And I would also say, go to pick up your book of Revelation. Have a look in there. There's all sorts of interesting things to do with the ID 2020, the mark of the beast, the idea that, you know, humanity is going to be enslaved like a kind of George Orwell's Animal Farm, you know, where they're just farming us, these people, and trying to anyway. I don't think they're going to succeed. The question for me, Will, is just how many people are going to go down in their attempt to destroy and enslave humanity, because they can't succeed in this task, but they're going to go down fighting, and so are we, I suppose.
Yeah, Tony, I could not agree with you more. If you look at human history, from even a lay person, you see you look at the Bible, whatever, it's a history of people fighting back against tyranny and oppression for freedom. And unfortunately now, like you've said, we don't even own our organs. So if that okay, doesn't
just,
give...
Just one more thing is, I think one thing that's often missing is the positive ways forward. And we saw that with the now smashed yellow vests at France. They put together a fantastic manifesto of changes they wanted to see. I think it's something like 25 points of change, which was, you know, you can look at that, and that is a united front. We can all get behind all this stuff. That is to say, you know, basic utilities, the things we need to live, should not be controlled for private profit in private hands. This is the sort of stuff they're saying. You know, no one has a problem with a private car manufacturer. But when it comes to water, electricity, you know, telecoms, these things should be regulated by and actually transparent and run transparently by the people we elect. And they shouldn't be all hidden behind closed doors, these sorts of things. And then also the basic changes that are needed to the money system. You know, we don't need money all the time. We shouldn't have to rely on money all the time. Much of our I think, you know, human rights are not human rights. If you have to pay for them, they should be free. The shelter, roof over your head, water, food, these sorts of things, you know, we all need them. So let's try and make them free. There's no reason why we should have to pay for them. So the money system,
I disagree, Tony. I think we can still spend that money better on the military industrial complex. I you're acting a little crazy. I was enjoying this interview until now. Yeah, it's so crazy. I mean, we spend all this money on this frivolous, murderous stuff, but yet, I mean, you want to bomb some country that doesn't do? Yeah, let's first take care of food, shelter, and water and our essential human freedoms first, and then we can have that discussion.
Come on, it's not Wernher von Braun, is it? And rocket science. It definitely isn't. And the other thing, of course, is land. So, you know, land needs to be, in some way, we need, well, it's very simple. You get the big, big landowners and you divide it up so that people have got somewhere to live and somewhere to grow a few vegetables. You know, everyone needs that as a right. Even people living in tower blocks. It's quite, I mean, when we were in Russia, you could see there are these allotments near the tower blocks. So people could go down in the lift. And then they go and, you know, till their little bit of soil. They make a few Brussels sprouts and, you know, turnips or whatever, and they can grow some food. Everyone needs to have that as a basic right. I don't see why we can't have it. So these are the sorts of things I think, you know, it's nice to finish on a positive note, is we need to get these things together. We need to be quite, centered about what we're fighting for rather than what we're fighting against.
I totally agree. And I think it's a beautiful thing. Quite frankly, I'm probably one of the most unflinchingly optimistic people when it comes to all this for a very long time. But when this COVID started happening for 2 months, I was getting like, okay, a little bit upset. But I now see that people are reacting. People are fighting for their freedom. And it's truly a beautiful thing. I really thought that, especially this country, was a bunch of pussies that we're just going to lay down. That's not seeming to happen. And I'm very, very pleased with that. And I agree with you too. I'm like George Carlin. I think we should put all the homeless people in golf courses, because it's a frivolous extra space right there. I'm sorry if you like golf, but I totally agree.
There's lots of empty homes out there. Big, rich people have been investing in property. Let's put them in there, in some of these empty big mansion houses. Give them somewhere nice to live. What's the problem with that? In fact, here in Bristol, we've done that. We've been putting the homeless in hotels. When this all finishes, they're planning to put them in student accommodation, where you've got like a little shoebox to live in. And that's just because they don't want to pay for proper accommodation for these homeless people. But I mean, ultimately, you're right. You're absolutely right. I think it's quite feasible that the elite have really overstretched themselves, and they're going down a cul-de-sac, and they may have made a big mistake here. But then they're arrogant. You know, they think that everyone believes what they see on the TV, which they don't.
Yeah, totally agree. Tony, you've been very generous with your time. I want you guys all to visit thisweek.org.uk. Get this guy's information out. Share. He's a very intelligent, very humble person. I asked him to promote himself, and he promoted other people. That was very cool. But Tony, stay on the ball. We need you out there. And God bless you. Keep up the good fight. Hopefully we'll talk again soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Will. I will say one other website, which is the 9/11 forum, because we've been on that for years here. Right. 9/11, that's the numbers, 911forum.org.uk. You'll find all sorts of stuff there. In fact, you can get, I mean, I get told by people that they can spend hours and hours and get lost in there. But anyway, it's lots of interesting, useful information, particularly on, you know, the centuries of deceptions and the bigger picture. There's a whole section on there called The Bigger Picture, which will just, I suppose, entertain you and pique your interest on all sorts of stuff that, you know, the idea is to keep people stupid. One of the most powerful figures in the Nazi party was a guy called Martin Bormann, the private secretary to Adolf Hitler. The British brought him out secretly at the end of World War II for the money he controlled. And that is another whole nother story we could talk about if you want to, but another time. But Bormann's quote was, let me just collect my thoughts. It was every educated person is a future enemy. So do Bormann in and educate yourself. Go to the 9/11 forum and have a look at the bigger picture section, because there's loads and loads of stuff there. And the old Bilderberg website, if you really want to get to the bottom of who these guys are and the connections with the Nazis, they are Nazis, effectively, the modern day version. And, you know, that's a good place to get more background on them as well. So, you know, the idea is they're trying to keep us stupid, Will. I'm afraid it ain't going to work.
Could not agree more. Go get yourself educated out there, folks. Find all of Tony's sites. They will be right here. Once you get educated, share the news and get nonviolently active so we can change this, because I really think we can. And it's up to you guys to do it. Tony, God bless you. And I hope to talk to you very, very soon.
Cheers, Will. God bless too. Bye.